Welcome to Eavesdrop. We are excited you are joining our show. My name is Jenny, and I'd like to introduce my friend Heather.
Hello, how are you?
Good today, how are you?
Thanks, doing well.
We want to invite you to eavesdrop on our conversation about life, about relationships, about family. And all in all, what we want to do is everything that we do, glorify and honor God. So we're going to invite you in a part of our conversation today. And one of the things that we have been talking about that have just been part of our lives is Mom's Day is coming up, something we get to celebrate and look forward to. And we've been talking about relationships and about voices that have influenced our lives, our moms specifically as one that have had some powerful impacts in our lives. We were talking a little while ago about our moms and the things that we used to hear and listen as growing up and the influences they had in our lives. Heather, do you remember talking about the things your mom used to say about what you would wear or different things about being that perfect one?
Oh, yes. I remember growing up, I'm an only child. So when I got ready to go places, I was a direct reflection of my mother. So I wore approved clothing. It was ironed. My shoes were always white. Everything had to be a certain way. And the funny part was, I actually grew to love the way my mother dressed me. Mm-hmm. I very rarely had anything that was a print, because prints go out of style. So I learned how to dress very classically.
Really?
I typically wear solids. You can mix and match solids, and you just buy a classic piece. And then as the trends come by, you buy some accessories that are trendy. So it was kind of a neat thing that my mother's taught me. But in the very beginning, I really wanted to rebel against it, because, you know, all my friends had all these 80s crazy neon clothing.
Did you get a say in what you wore?
I think when I was probably about 14 or 15,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
About 14 or 15.
My mom made our clothes. She sewed. She made a lot of clothes. And so we did the prints. That was the big thing about, she had liked to get the prints and mix and have the matches of the different. Yeah, I know. You're looking at me like, no, that ain't.
No, we did not do prints in my family.
Oh, the prints are one of those things, especially when you see it out now and you see those women that have those prints that are on, and you're like, where did those come from? Because now we can look at them and what could look down.
And you can pick out exactly what year they were in. You can pick out the little trends that were going on. And my mother really frowned down upon that. She loved classic. Mm-hmm. So you can look at pictures of me growing up and you have really no context of, you know, if you were in 82 or 89. Whereas you would know if you saw bangle bracelets or if you saw really big hair, you would know.
Yeah, well, that's when you see people out now. You can sit there and you have that special bond. All you have to look them in the eyes like, oh, you were a child of the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, bonded.
Immediately. Big hair and guitar bands.
Oh, and especially if a song comes on and then you look around and you're the only one, you're not the only one singing that song, and you see somebody else kind of nodding to it, you're like, oh yeah, they were a child of the 80s. They were all in it and stuff like that. Do you do that with your kids? Pick out their clothes?
I try. We have days of the week where I'll say, today you need to dress appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
And they know exactly what that means. And there will be an argument if they do not heed to exactly what that means. For instance, they wanted to come listen to the show being taped today. Mm-hmm. So they had to be ready at a certain time, of which they were not.
Which is always the case.
Absolutely. And I told them to dress appropriately. And one of them tries to go to the car in a pair of boots. Okay, we are in May in Alabama in a pair of boots.
Jeans. UGG boots?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thick winter boots, gray pants, and a coral cami, like spaghetti strap cami. How is this appropriate? There's not one piece of those three items that should all go together.
Which, I mean, you know, and I have one that ends up having like the sweater on with the boots too, like you said, and then she's in a jean mini skirt, and it's like, you're going to burn up, but I look cute. Well, your definition of cute is not my definition of cute, and I run this show here.
Which I think that comes from my mother. Do you remember the Huxtables on the Bill Cosby show?
Yes, my favorite. Oh my gosh, one of my favorites.
I loved that show, and I can remember watching the relationship and the banter almost between you know, Bill Cosby, Dr. Huxtable, and his wife, Claire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was a doctor and she was an attorney, and the play between the two of them. But I remember one time, one of the daughters, probably Lisa Bonet, because, you know, she was always pushing the limits.
Yeah.
She refused to wear an outfit that her mother told her she was going to wear.
Oh, I remember that episode.
And the mother's response was, "I brought you into this world. I can take you out.
And how many times did you hear that?
And from that point, that was just a really good subtitle or a tag, like a marketing tag underneath my mother, because that was really what it was. She brought me into this world and she could take me out. Mm-hmm. She held every bit of control of my life. Mm-hmm. And she got me where I needed to be. She took care of every detail. So I think without ever saying a word about it, my mom held a very high place in my life. Mm-hmm. She spoke truth into my life. Mm-hmm. She gave me incredible insight. I mean, just the little things she taught me about dressing, about making sure that, you know, your house looked a certain way, doing your best at all times, because you never knew who was going to be looking at what time. And if they made a snapshot judgment of your life based on that performance alone, what they would think of you. So, I mean, she taught me so many good things. Mm-hmm. That I think she just did it kind of like, that was the side dish, but that side dish is more than a lot of people I think today get as the main course, you know?
And it's, and it's similar. You and I've had conversations. Our mothers, even though we've lived apart in different states, our mothers represented a lot of similar things with both of us. Mm-hmm. My mom was the same way. She ran the house with dad having gone to work, but she ran the house. Dinner was cooked at a certain time.
Oh, yes.
The house was cleaned at a certain time. We all had responsibilities. We all had things to do to check in. We all had to participate in cleaning of the house. We all had chores. We all had specific things. She clothed us. I mean, when I say clothed us, she did help pick out. There were certain standards we could not wear. Mm-hmm. We were not allowed out of the house certain ways. But the priorities of being at church, setting that standard for us, she represented so much of what we thought a mother. And I used to think when you were talking about the Huxtables, that was the one show because of my dad being a doctor and my mom, who she wasn't a working mom. But I used to have this image of that was my mom running the show with talking with all the kids. And the looks that Claire Huxtable would give her children of the, "Oh, no, you didn't. I did not see that come out of your mouth." And her little her eyes would get so big. But I think so much of what our mothers have raised us to be, the influence that they have had on our lives for our children. Do you have that thought process of their days when you sit there and go, "I have become my mother"?
Oh, I am my mother. It's not become. I am. There are moments when I feel like I'm having an out-of-body experience.
And your mother has invaded your life.
I'm listening to my mother come out of me in such a real way that it's not even like it's not me. It is her in me. It's crazy. And I think, she did this to me.
She caused this.
She said she was going to do this to me.
And
she cursed me that I would have at least one just like me. And I have three in all different ways. She has become me. And I am gone. And now I am my mother.
And here we are. I know. I'm with you.
It is the most bizarre thing. But it's good. And that's the weirdest part about it, is that somehow growing up and deciding that, you know, I was going to be so different than my family and I was going to grow up and I was going to do all these things. And then you get married and you have kids and you realize the values that they had are really the values that you have.
And that you want to instill in your children. You want those.
Absolutely. You would almost fight for those for you and for your kids, because that is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And just because, you know, as a child, I didn't appreciate the format in which I was being given these lessons, and I would have preferred them to be done in a different context, or, you know, I wish my mom would have spoken a lot more like me. Mm-hmm. I wish she would have been a lot more of a feeler. My mom is a thinker. Mm-hmm. I am very intuitive. My mother is very sensing. You know, we're very different people, but I think that's one of the things that I've realized as I've gotten older, you know, as I've really started to be my own woman, you know, and it takes about 40 years to figure out what that is. And about two
Only
more to
40?
It took me 40.
Only 40?
It took me 40 to figure out who I was.
Wait
and
a
then
minute.
Two years still to go, I don't think I like that.
I don't know if I want to know what the next 10 years are like. But yeah. You're right. It's so much of where the values that we didn't appreciate growing up, so much of what we've learned, whether we agreed or disagreed with them at the time of growing up, so much of what we walked through with them is so much of what we do value now with our own children through all of that.
Yeah. I think it's that tape, you know, Jenny and I talk a lot about a mental tape and that, you know, you've heard people probably say that you've got that little devil on your shoulder that's talking to you,
and trying to
get you, and trying to get you to do things that you wouldn't naturally do. And then you've got that little angel on the other side. And I really think that that's a little bit overused, but I know for myself, I really do have a tape in my head that plays. And, when I became a wife, my mother's voice started playing in my head about how I should keep my house. And the things that I had been brought up knowing started coming out. Well, then when I became a mother, you know, Dr. Spock joined that little committee in my head. And as, you know, you get to church, then you start adding different types of teachings. You know, and if you're the structured mommy or if you're the, you know, demand mommy, you know, whichever one of those people will get onto your little committee. And you have this tape that starts playing that is almost highlighting where you think your inadequacies are.
Yeah.
And nobody really has to honestly say those words to you. It's your perception.
But you hear them.
And
they're in your head.
And constantly grading myself.
Yes.
Became a big part of mothering.
Well, and you and I've talked about the power of the voice, because that was one of the things that with our mental tapes, how strong that voice becomes in our head, whether it's from our moms, whether it's from other relationships, other people of influence in our lives, but the power of a voice that it has that can build us up or tear us down, and how much we've allowed so much of that to come in, that the devil on the side and the angel on the side that are talking to us, listening, hearing, and sharing with us and speaking to us on that. But the power of a voice is an incredible part of who we've become. And from our moms, we've learned quite a bit, learned a lot of wonderful things that have brought us into where we are as our own moms with our own kids and everything. Do you find your children repeating things that you've said that you can already see 20 years from now? They're going to become you?
Oh, I think they already are.
Yeah.
I took a big group last night to a concert here in town, and afterwards I was debriefing with my children about, okay, and that child will never be in our car again. and let's just go over the reasons why. And both of my children could pick out different things that child was doing, saying, or believed that were going to be detrimental to a friendship with my child. And they were not putting positive seeds into my child's life. They were not valuing my child, disrespecting them, saying things that were not appropriate.
Yeah.
And so I think that it does start young because, you know, I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old.
Yeah.
So at this age, my 12-year-old and my 10-year-old are already starting to see, wow, this could affect me. The girls that I hang out with, the guys that I hang out with and potentially date, what they say to me and how they treat me, that could go onto my tape.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think they start to see, you know, this is what mama doesn't like. This is what mama's really tuned into and trying to keep us from and trying to show us that this is going to cause us harm down the road. So I think they're starting to get that, whether or not they can process it down at a level that is, you know, going to benefit them later. I don't know, but can they see it? I think so. Can they grasp it? Yeah. And do they repeat it to you?
Yes. Yes.
I definitely do at 12 and 10. I think they can.
It's amazing what our children pick up. I remember picking up things growing up and talking with my mom. I had a great open relationship with mom where I felt safe, where I could talk and share things, even about what other friends were doing, other friends were saying, how that affected me in a relationship, which is so much what I desire for my own children. And I have the two boys and the girl. having the boy conversations are a little bit different than the girl conversations because I have to pull that information out in different ways. But the influences that our children are already experiencing, I was talking to another mom the other day, wondering what our mothers would be like in this age and generation, because where we grew up, we didn't have the phone, the internet, all the stuff that it, would our mothers have done anything differently, you think, in their raising of us compared to what we have to raise our own children with, the boundaries, the filters that we have to put on our own children? Do you think they would have done things differently?
I don't know. I guess I would call it parallel, you know. I remember when, you know, when we were growing up in the 80s, that was the beginning of video games. It was the beginning of, do you remember the boom boxes?
All of that, and the music coming out.
Cassettes. We just made the switch from 8-tracks to cassettes.
So
all of that was happening. And I remember I was not allowed to have the Atari. Because
we never had one either.
My father really felt like the Atari was just going to take time away from the things that were important, which were studying, my athletics, family time, and chores. And that's really the four things that took up most of our time. And where I grew up in West Virginia, church was pretty much a Sunday thing.
Yeah.
There wasn't something on Wednesday nights at the church, and there weren't, you know, things like Upward, basketball, or anything like that. It was really just church on Sunday. So the four things that really took over my life at that point and really shaped me were
Those four things. Yeah.
And my father was right. A video game and an Atari would have taken away time for one of those four things, and it wasn't worth the priority. So, you know, my children laugh because, yes, we do have a Wii.
Yeah.
But the funny part is, it is not something that we play with every day. And when we do play with it, we play with it as a family.
Yes.
And it's very much a inconsequential thing. But, you know, I'm one of the last holdouts. I realize that. I have a 12-and-a-half-year-old without a cell phone.
That's not a bad thing.
In the minority, and I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
Because I absolutely recognize that when I give my child a cell phone, I will be looking at the top of their head for the rest of the time that I have them in my house.
Yes.
I realize it's a great punishment tool. And I'm not going to pay money every month for a punishing tool, but I hear it's great and it works wonderfully well.
Well, but I mean, the cell phones really are texting, and I should know where my children are without having to call them and find out where they are.
In the house.
In the house.
Right.
And not text you to say, hey, come down for dinner. Really? But
yeah. I remember dreaming about one day having a house that had a PA system that I could just push the button and say, kids, come down for dinner. And now I realize, why do that? Everybody's got a cell phone. You know, most families, you just send a group text.
Well, it's the power of the voice. You can holler up the stairs and they're going to hear you just as loud and clear. Speaking of that PA system, we had one in the house, one of the first ones we ever had. And I could hear my children upstairs. They were not asleep. At nighttime, they didn't know how the PA system worked until we punched a button and I said, this is God. I can see you and I can hear you. And all of a sudden you hear this, that's really mommy talking. And I was like, no, it's not.
This is not your mother.
This is not your mother. God may sound like your mother, but this is really not your mother. But you know, I mean, and that's, I wonder, my mom and I, we've had conversations because now my mom has the grandchildren that have the cell phones.
Oh, yeah.
And she's had to learn how to look at them and go, I'm sorry, I need face-to-face time with you, not the texting part of it. Although, she's had to get on the bandwagon if she wants to have a relationship and even as a part of her relationship with her grandchildren, she's had to learn how to text. She's had to learn how to do all the media stuff and be able to be a part of it because that's what the kids are all living with. The mom's favorite answer was like, well, I don't know the answer. I'll just Google it.
Which is great because, you know, here we have these great women who raised us.
Yes.
And now they're becoming grandmothers, which is a totally different role. And my mother is a completely different grandmother than she was a mother.
My mother was not this good. I mean, she's worse. She's great as a grandmother, but spoils her grandkids. She didn't spoil us.
No, no. And I think that's a really neat paradigm shift for them. to go from being absolutely responsible for our character development and the ability for us to be self-sufficient, which I'm telling you, those were the two most important things in my parents' lives, was character development and self-sufficiency.
Yes.
They could have cared less what degree I got. I was just going to get one, and I was going to finish it within 5 years, or they weren't going to pay.
Right. Right.
And they were going to be bound and determined that my middle name would be Heather Financially Independent Davis.
Yes.
That was the most important thing
that
for my
it.
Father. Financially independent. Which, you know, if you asked him right now, he'd probably say, We're still
walking down that road.
We are still loving you that way.
We still have hope. But never give up.
But, you know, I think it's great because now that they're grandparents, they're not cared at all about character development. They don't care at all about financial independence. They just want to say, that one looks so cute on you. Oh, absolutely. And can we take you up here and do this fun thing with you? And
because they get to bring them back.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Spoiled and ruined.
Yeah, that we have to deprogram them when they come back.
And then we have to do deprogramming and boot camp to get them ready to go back into the real world that is.
Yes. Parenting.
So that they're financially independent and have good character.
You know, and I'm amazed because you and I know several folks that are grandparents that have taken on the responsibility as parenting again for their own grandkids. And it's such a, I don't remember one growing up and hearing a lot about, you know, older folks that had parenting responsibilities like I do today. Where so much of we've got grandparents that have taken on the responsibilities as parenting again. Their parenting has not stopped because grandparents, and they've had to step in roles as parents and be on top of it. And I'm constantly amazed and in awe of those folks that we know that they've had to be able to do that. One of the things I was thinking about as far as our voices, that the impact that has on it, and what we say with our children, the influences that are the outside world, the influences that you and I now have to deal with our children, the Facebook. What's even more is the ones at school that have come in, the bullying at school. You had, and I want you to share it because it meant so much to me that I was able to share it with my daughter, was when yours tried out for cheerleading, and the impact, one, that she had when you were telling me about it, but she tried out for cheerleading, didn't make it. And you got to see, you saw other girls treat others a certain way.
Yeah, it was a very unique experience. And, you know, I can't say that there was a lot of forethought that went into this, but apparently it's a tradition. So forethought's really not necessary if you've begun a tradition, I guess. But in the town that we're in, the school has a week-long clinic for cheerleading tryouts. And then at the end of that, everybody does their tryout. And then the whole group goes to a restaurant to eat.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this really big table full of girls that had all just tried out for cheerleader. And, you know, I think like 25 kids tried out and they had like 15 spots. So they're all sitting there. And you realize that 10 of these girls are not going to make it.
Yeah.
So you're looking at almost 40% are not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, all the parents are kind of dispersed through the rest of the restaurant. So they were probably there 15, 20 minutes. We've ordered drinks. The parents' tables have already ordered food. But, of course, the kids' tables just have the cheese dip and salsa. And so they're kind of all hitting around. And then it starts. And you see all these little middle school girls start looking on their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And you start hearing the screams. And you start to realize that people know who's made it and who hasn't. So my daughter did not make it, and I was very disheartened for her, and even her little sister was just devastated for her. So she comes over and tells me she didn't make it, and I said, oh, baby, I'm so sorry. And she says, it's okay. And she looks back to all of her friends sitting at the big table, and she says, okay, well, I'm going to go back over there. And it was like disappointment, realization, I'm going back to be with my friends.
Mm-hmm.
Relationship.
Yeah.
And so she went back over. Well, within about 5 minutes, you saw all of the other girls who didn't make it, all of the other girls and all of their parents leave the restaurant. And they all left. And so I sent my younger daughter over to see if that's what my oldest wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, no, I'm fine. So she continued to stay. And within about 5-10 minutes, she realized she was the only one there that didn't make it. But she was really there for the relationship of it, which I think is one of the biggest strong suits for my daughter, is that she's really about relationship. Mm-hmm. She really cares about the people involved.
Her friends.
And she does. She looks at them as a friend. She doesn't care if they made it or didn't make it. She just wanted to be with them. So I think that was probably one of those proud moments you get in the middle of, this didn't go the way you wanted it to, and I'm really, really sorry.
Yeah.
You get to see...
Character.
I talk a lot about this, but you get to see that glimmer of who they're going to be.
Yes.
When they grow up.
Yes.
And you realize, okay, I could care less that she's not going to be a cheerleader in the seventh grade, because that little girl right there is going to be a fine woman.
Yes.
And so I think that was the beauty that came in a really bad moment.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that, you know, we grab those moments.
Yeah.
You know, for those of us who kind of are busy in the middle of parenting, or we have multiples, you're running a zone defense in your parenting, that when you get those moments, you can show them. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing that just happened here tonight. And I was so proud of her. Even her dad was just so proud of the way she handled it. And that's the thing. Your kids will not make everything they try out for.
No, they're not going to.
And if you only let them try out for the things that you know they're going to make, have you really set them up for what life is about?
Right. Right.
You know?
Well, and we talk about, you know, and that's, we've got friends that have talked about that they grew up never learning how to fail, never learning what it means to be disappointed, they didn't learn what it means to fail at something, lose at something, be on the losing team, and become a team player. And even they struggle so much in the walk today as their adult life. They can't keep jobs. They struggle with relationships with their spouses. Mm-hmm. They struggle with their children trying to maintain a balance of, hey, you may be on a losing team when they haven't experienced it themselves.
Yeah.
And it amazes me. One, I think it amazes me how the character of our children is becoming so critical for the heart of who they're going to become, these young men and women that are this next generation that are going to lead our country, that are going to lead our churches, that are going to be fathers and mothers and aunts and uncles, and the impact they have, that so much even from where you and I've talked so much for is that we get so caught up in fighting a behavior that we miss out on fighting for their heart. We miss out, and it becomes, as we've talked about, the voice, and becomes that, the fighting for the flesh and blood, fighting for, we're fighting that losing battle.
Oh yeah.
Of the specific things that, if, like you said, picking up on that moment of that one glimpse of a moment.
It would have been very easy for her to come away from that thinking this was, and when we're talking about flesh and blood, that it was only a physical thing.
Right.
She did not make cheerleader. That is the physical reality that happened that night.
Mm-hmm.
But the spiritual truth that happened that night, much more important and eternal in value, not 1 year in her life, but eternal in value, is that she knew how to value people above an accomplishment.
Yes.
And I know lots of women who can't do that.
No.
And so that's that moment where, you know, as a mom, you just want to reach in there and grab it and show it to them and go, I am well pleased in this.
Mm-hmm.
I could care less.
Yes.
That you didn't make cheerleader. I am so excited and so proud for this that I'm going to tell every single one of my friends, because I wouldn't have been able to do that at 12. I'm just going to be honest.
Oh, I
at 12 years old, I would have been devastated, crying, and have left the building like every other little girl there. And there's nothing wrong with what they did. Don't hear me say there's anything wrong. I just got to see something really extra special in my child. And I'd like to say you can't teach that, but I really kind of feel like the people who God's put in her life have really helped shape her to where she is all about relationship. And I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, what's in store for her down the road, because she can do that, because she can value people over that. And, you know, I'm not saying that I'm trying to raise some kid that is not competitive and doesn't have any goals and doesn't want to go after accomplishments, because she does.
Right.
I'm just saying that, you know, there are those moments that you got to grab.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, I pray that God makes me sensitive to those mm-hmm. because I am busy and I am running a zone defense with 3 children and 2 parents yeah. and 2 careers.
Yeah.
And yeah. they're all in different, you know, areas. I've got 1 in preschool, 1 in intermediate school, and 1 in middle school.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're stretched a little thin. So that's the most important thing is when you have the opportunity, I think, to speak those kind of truths into yeah. a child's life, take it. Run with it.
Well, and you just hit on, I think, a critical point that is so valuable that where our lives are, because I'm right there with you, full-time job, single mom of 3,
yeah,
with parents, and high school that I've, you know, it hit, I've got 2 grade schools. I got 2 years left of 1 mm-hmm. that, and the dating and all of that, and to find those moments where I can love on them, encourage them when I see those character moments, encourage them that, hey, I love you, not because you've done anything, mm-hmm. I just love you and who you're becoming. And it's funny because when I'll share my kids with them, I'm like, I just love you. And they're like, why? I just do. Mm-hmm. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of the young man you're becoming, mm-hmm. that God is shaping your heart, the young woman that God is shaping you mm-hmm. to be. And grabbing those moments, because before long, they're going to be gone.
Or they're going to be listening to other people.
Other people. And that's...
which I think is really powerful that we need to, you know, and try early
yeah.
to speak truth into your child's life. And, you know, for me, I'm learning so much about inviting other people that are adults and trustworthy individuals to have a voice
yes.
in their life.
Yes.
Because, you know, we are approaching that age with my 12-year-old where... she looks at me when I say a certain truth to her, mm-hmm. and she thinks, oh, my mother said da-da-da-da-da. And it doesn't matter what it is that I'm saying. It's the fact that it came from mother.
Mm-hmm.
But if certain other cool, hip moms speak yeah. that into their life, then it's like they've heard a new truth.
Exactly.
And they'll come share it with me, and I'm like, duh,
I just
is
told
that
you
not
that
what I had said to
that
you?
That is what I had said.
To you. And yes. I just want to be so specific with them, but, you know, it's important that they get a multitude of voices, male and female.
Yes.
Women who are stay-at-home moms, women who have careers, women who are business owners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, different voices with the power of conviction to say, this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I was made, you know?
And becoming so grounded in who they are, what they believe in. And I think you're absolutely right about how much an importance having other influences in their lives that value who they are,
mm-hmm.
that want to invest in their lives just as much as we have been asked to invest in their children's lives or mm-hmm. others' lives to be a part of it. It is that whole village. It is that whole community. It is yeah. a part of all of that.
It is community at its best.
It is.
Community at its best is a group of people who share a common belief and a common interest in the development of their children. You know, that I know without a shadow of a doubt that
yes.
I've got 3 other families
mm-hmm.
that if something happened to my husband and I needed to be with him at a hospital, I've got 3 other families
mm-hmm.
that at a moment's notice, I could say, I don't even have my kids with me. 1's at daycare and 2 are in school. I need mm-hmm. you to go get them.
Mm-hmm. And it would be
and
done.
And take care of them, and I'll call you when I can. And without hesitation, each
yeah.
one of them would say, okay, I got it.
Which, and that's where getting to that, breaking out of that scary zone where we've gotten so much, I think, where we're scared to let others come in
mm-hmm.
because of all the other bad stuff that's been out there. And we hear about the sexual predators. We hear about all that stuff. So many folks are so scared. They've become isolated. They hunker down and bury down, which is so lonely. It
well,
breaks my heart that somebody...
It's just the power of fear.
It is.
Yes,
letting
there
that
are
control.
People out there in this world.
Yeah.
And yeah, you might even get an app that you can put on your phone and you can see how many live within 5 miles of you. And yes, that could scare you. It could scare you into an isolation. But when that happens,
mm-hmm.
you are limited to the giftings that you and your husband have.
Yes.
And yeah, they may be pretty powerful in conjunction, but anytime you add multiple layers of other people's giftings with a common belief and a common vision, it's just powerful.
And it builds and it encourages and it gives such an incredible fortress and a foundation mm-hmm. and a just and empowering, I think, that is incredible for our children. growing up to realize, mm-hmm. hey, I've had all of this.
Well, and I have value in other people's lives.
I matter.
Absolutely.
I matter.
Absolutely.
I matter.
And my choices matter.
They make a difference in somebody's lives. It's not mm-hmm. just about me.
Yeah.
It's about what matters to yeah. somebody else. And mm-hmm. that I have that kind of influence, just as somebody had in me, I have that influence in somebody else's life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have that. And it's an amazing thing. It's so much. I wonder if this is what it, like, two generations ago, you know, that was when all the families lived in all the neighborhoods. And we talk about neighborhoods where you could, everybody sits on the front porches and all the kids are running through the neighborhoods and
oh, that's how
everybody's
my parents
out. Mm-hmm. You know, they all, it was such an open, I don't know if open environment, but it was such a place where it was safe. It felt safe.
Well, my dad says that something happened in America. He calls it the transition
mm-hmm.
before the downfall. And he makes it so macabre, you know. But he swears that the backyard that got fenced in
yeah.
was the breakdown of America. Because yeah. nobody fenced in their backyards when they were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
My dad lived in this little small neighborhood, and there was actually a community garden in the mm-hmm. middle of this neighborhood, and everybody worked it, and everybody got the vegetables and the fruit out of mm-hmm. it in the summer. But in the fall, after they tilled it up, kids and parents involved, everybody tilled it up. They played baseball and they played dodgeball, and
they all got together.
Absolutely. Every kid in the neighborhood was there. And they came home when the lights mm-hmm. came on. Do you remember that?
Oh.
You came in for dinner when the lights came on. And you never played in the house. Everybody played outside. And that's actually how my parents met.
Mm-hmm.
They met playing on the neighborhood block. So, you know, he swears that that's what happened. We really started to build up our own little fortress instead mm-hmm. of building a community. And when we did that, we started walling each other off and not going after the friends and the family, you know, not just mm-hmm. biological, but the chosen family,
yeah.
the community of people to help raise. You know, he swears by that. And, you know, there's some truth in that.
There's some truth to that.
Yeah. I keep telling my girls, you know, they think they've got it bad.
Oh.
Because they get so mad at me. When they do something wrong, I do tell my friends. And I tell the ones that are going to speak truth to them. And I do it pretty quickly.
Well.
But they get real mad about that. But I keep telling them how much better off they are. Because I remember getting paddled one day school growing up. Because I'll never forget this kid named Joey Keener. He said that gymnasts were wimps, and I had had a cast on my arm, and so I smacked him over the head with my cast, and I was like, I'll show you wimpy. Knocked his little butt cold out. That's not wimpy, I'll tell you that. But I got paddled. Got paddled by the teacher, got paddled by the principal, and then I had to sit in the bad chair for the rest of the day. So I went home, and I went to my grandmother's after school because my mom worked, and I told my grandma what happened. She spanked me.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I was going home, I was walking home past like three houses. Then another mom who was pretty good friends with my mom had heard what happened because, of course, her daughter ratted me out. She spanked me. Then I got home and my mom spanked me. And do you know what dreaded word she said? Just wait till
your father
gets home. So I got spanked by him. So that really shaped me because that one bad choice, that one impulsive act had so many consequences
yes.
before it was really over and done.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really never did that again. You know, somebody could say something nasty to me and my response was not going to ever be the same.
Right.
Because I had learned my lesson.
Right.
Well, nowadays we don't have time and we've isolated ourselves that the consequences are never.
They're never powerful.
Right. It's never long affecting enough.
No.
That we think about it. I mean, I'm 41 years old, and I still remember the day that I hit Joey Keener.
With cast. Well, and I think that's where so much of, because I have the same thing, and we are blessed that we have our families so close together that mine are kids that I know that you would speak truth to, and
absolutely
I would speak truth to yours, because they all can look at each other, and they're going to get the same look from you and I, because it's like, it's not coming over. But it's funny, because my 16-year-old, had one conversation about, and it was one time sharing with the relationship that he was in a while back ago, and that ended when, and I was so proud of, it was a very hard and difficult walk that he mm-hmm. had to walk on to get through that. But I remember him going, why did you have to share with Miss Heather? And I'm like, one, because they're my friends and we hold each other accountable and they're that. I said, but two, she's going to speak truth to you as well, too. And you've got influences in your life that love you, that desire your heart to follow God's heart, mm-hmm. that want the best for you. Yeah. Why would I not?
Yeah.
Why would I not want the best for you?
And you know, like, I don't ever want to think that my parents were geniuses, but sometimes I think they were evil geniuses. They put me in these great opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, I was in cheerleading and gymnastics, and one of the very first things that you learn in gymnastics is how to fall.
Yes.
It is the most important thing that you're ever going to learn in gymnastics, because no matter if you only do it for 1 year, five mm-hmm. years, 10 years, 15 mm-hmm. years, the tricks get harder and harder. Mm-hmm. The most important thing is you got to know how to fall so you don't get hurt.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the power that we have as adults speaking truth into young adults and into teenagers and the tweens, and it is that we can teach them how to fall well.
Yes.
And fall forward.
Yes.
You know, I think that's the most powerful gift that we can give somebody, is showing them that even in their mistakes, there are ways to own it.
Yeah.
That it can take the consequence of it and turn it for good. God really does that. He really, really gives you the power to do that if you have other people who have that relationship before the fall happens.
Well,
but if you wait,
yeah,
then it's almost like a punishment to the child. Mm-hmm. So you don't want that to happen. You really just want to surround them with people that when they fall can give them the hope of how to work this in a way that they can own the truth.
Yeah.
They can accept a consequence, and it can be an ability to gain something, whether it's character development, a new perspective, or even a skill that they can use in later life.
As we wrap up this show, and I'm amazed at, and you and I've had conversations, how influencing these power, these voices are in our lives and things like that. And the impact that our children have from us and from those around us. If you could give to a woman that's listening today, mom or not, working, single, all of the aspects of a woman that's listening to our show today, and we'll give you an opportunity, what would you encourage for them to be able, as they go forward, that they would gain one encouragement from listening to us today that you would hope that they would walk away with?
Well, my hope would be that they wouldn't think, oh my gosh, I'm failing.
Yes.
There's so much that I haven't been doing, and I never even thought about it that way, because, you know, so many times I never think about it that way. So my hope would be that you could see that God has got this.
Yeah.
And that there are probably people that he's put in your life that if you approached them and said, hey, I think I might want you to be someone that would walk with me in the way I raise my children, and I'd like to invest in your children's lives, that they're probably already there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just be a little bit vulnerable and ask for that. But also know that there's absolutely nothing that is not possible with God.
Yeah.
You know, all through the Old Testament, we would say that this is possible. This is possible. This is possible with God. And then in the New Testament, it says there is nothing that is not possible. Mm-hmm. So it just gets bigger. You know, whatever you could ask or imagine, God will do in your children's lives. Mm-hmm. And if you're not a mom, that is awesome. Look at the sphere of influence that you have, because it's not always kids.
Right.
You know, Paul never got married in the Bible. Timothy, we don't know what happened with him, but that relationship, that mentor-mentee relationship mm-hmm. is incredibly powerful. Look and see who God's got around you, because I'll bet there's some investment that you can make in someone's life. And even as a young teen, there's people that you can be investing in mm-hmm. that it will absolutely pay dividends in this world. There's a scripture in the Old Testament in Isaiah 55:11, where it says that never will my word ever be sent out. And this is God speaking. He says, my word will never be sent out where it will return void.
Yeah.
It will always bear a harvest in its time. So I promise there is absolutely nothing that can come against you when you are putting out the truth of God's word into a child's life, into a young adult's life, that it's not going to bear a harvest. Even if you don't see it, it will bring a harvest, and it will be at the appointed time. So there is no way to fail when you're doing investment. Invest the best you've got and let it go.
And, you know, the encouragement that you've just said, I would echo, and there's, you've said it perfectly. I mean, just that those that are listening would know that they are valued, mm-hmm. that they are worthy, and that they are loved, and that they mean something and can invest and be a part of someone's life, and that they are a voice.
Yeah,
they have a voice.
Give what you've got.
Give what you've got. And that is good. And it will be used, and it will be honoring and glorifying in all that you do. Well, we are excited that you were able to eavesdrop on our conversation today. We hope that you will look forward to joining us the next time. Until then, we will see you again. Bye-bye.